The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Delighted to have you here on Wheels Up Wednesday. And I'm looking at some of the stories this morning, and I'm already thinking that Conspiracy Theory Thursday may be coming a day early, or maybe it's just becoming more of, okay, it's a conspiracy theory day, just to, you know, look at the news. Oh, there it is. Yeah, here's the the next conspiracy and another one. Hey, there is a very interesting story. KDRV Newswatch 12 is reporting this yesterday. Medford School District voted to launch an independent investigation regarding one of their board members. A written complaint received alleging improper conduct on behalf of a board member, not named. Board of Directors held a special meeting last night. School Board Chair Cynthia Wright shared during the meeting that a copy of the complaint was also previously delivered to each board member by the district's legal counsel. No board member argued why the complaint should not be referred for investigation under the board policy. The board members then took a vote with the school board director, Lilia Caballero, abstaining, Michael Williams being the only no vote. I think that this is the best decision for both the complainant and the board member that the complaint was made against, that a fair investigation can begin, Wright said. When Caballero said, I'm not comfortable with the decision, people in the audience cheered. As the meeting came to an end, those members in attendance started to yell, cowards. What an interesting time. Now, remember the conversations I had a few weeks ago with Michael Williams, the board member of the Medford School Board, or one of the board directors, who was talking out of school, so to speak, bringing up information that the SRO, the school resource officer, the police officer for the district, Josh Doney, Medford officer Josh Doney, was reassigned, and he was calling this retaliation for telling the truth about school safety issues, especially involving Medford 549C and the way they were dealing with violent students. And, you know, it's kind of the same sort of thing where we have all of these disciplinary programs these days, which you really can't punish somebody, because you punish somebody, you have to talk the kids. You have to talk the kids to death when they, you know, bring a knife or a gun to school. Okay, it may be not that bad, but Medford, of course, bending over to bring dirtbag students that have real problems or real violent tendencies and keeping them in the schools. And Michael Williams was raising the alarm. Hey, I don't think this is cool. He was talking out of school. My opinion, of course, I don't know, because once again, they were not naming the complaint. I would dare say that the long knives are coming after Michael Williams, because we can't have people telling the truth about what's going on in government schools and maybe the inter-political battles between the superintendent who does his happy jazz hand, you know, television interviews, you know, Brett Champion, and, you know, and has all the great terms. But there it seems there was a difference of opinion on how violence was being handled there. And now a investigation because of conduct unbecoming of a member. In other words, you're not sitting down and just allowing the district to pour excrement on you. I think that's, you know, you have to be a mushroom. It's just my opinion. It's speculation because, like I said, they're keeping it quiet. I'll be very interested to see if I'll be able to talk about this with Michael Williams, if maybe Michael Williams will give us more details, because I think it's a pretty safe assumption that if there is a school board director who is under investigation, it's the one who's been making noise and embarrassing the regime. So there we go. And that's not a conspiracy theory Thursday, just evidence of conspiracy on Wednesday. But we'll see. Maybe it's just all on the up and up, and we just have to have an investigation and make sure that everybody is kind, and when there are uncomfortable truths, shut up. Because that's your job as a school board member, is to shut up about uncomfortable truths and rubber stamp what the unionized teachers' unions want, what the unionized teachers want, and what the superintendent wants. I don't know. I get rather cynical when it comes to government schools, which is why I've been saying, hey, You get on a school board, good for you if you're trying to do some changes. You're helping the next generation, maybe. Otherwise, if you have kids in the schools, get them out. Just get them out if you can find some way. Just get them out, get them out, get out. You know, run. Run for your children's lives, okay? All right. Let's see. Another story this morning. Oh, the nutting and slutting of RFK Jr. is beginning. Interesting story this morning in HuffPost. I don't know if you ever read HuffPost. I hardly ever do, but this one caught my eye. Newly minted Trump surrogate RFK Jr. promises to stop chemtrail crime. Just a few days after dropping his independent presidential bid mostly and joining Donald Trump's Republican campaign, RFK Jr. already amplifying a conspiracy theory that is completely bonkers even for him. Chemtrails. We're going to stop this crime, Kennedy posted on social media the other day in response to an X, formerly Twitter account, sharing a conspiracy theory video which claims that pilots use their planes to secretly spray chemicals on unsuspecting populations. These pilots, according to the videos, are hardened to humanity and could care less about killing off unwanted or leeching aspects of America and the world. Now, I always go to HuffPost.com for my Huffington Post for my political analyst, but, you know, you have to figure, yep, they're going to do their best now that RFK Jr. is just saying more of the wrong things. Now, you know that I've had my questions about the chemtrail conspiracy. Not that there are chemtrails, because they openly discuss. In fact, we even got Gates talking about it. Yes, we're going to do experiments here and spray aerosols to dim the sun because the Earth has a fever. The Earth has a fever, and the fever doesn't need more cowbell. It needs more barium sprayed in the air. You know, those kind of things. Now, I'm exhausted most of the time by people who call about the chemtrail conspiracies. Not that I don't think geoengineering gets done, because it does. There are black box, they have budgets for it. They talk about it openly now, probably just what they've been doing behind the scenes for a long, long time. The part that I consider rather ridiculous, though, are the people that every time there's a contrail in the sky, they call me going, look, look, they're spraying us. Oh, the spraying is heavy today. Oh, it's never been heavier than it's just stop it. Knock it off. Just knock it off. Contrails still exist. Talk to any pilot. And sometimes they'll exist. Other times the temperature is right. Other times the humidity is too low and you're not going to see a contrail. Well, look, they're turning on the contrail machine right now. And then you find out it's like United Airlines 348. You know, you sit there and you look at FlightAware. You can say, okay, no, these are commercial airlines. And the whole idea that they're putting chemtrails in commercial airline tanks, first of all, it would destroy the planes. Okay. So if there's geoengineering going on, it's specially designed planes. It's not United Airlines or Alaska and all the rest of it. Okay, I'll give you an example of the stuff that I get all the time in my email box. And this came from Jeremy. Jeremy's a good guy, writes me on chemtrail stuff all the time. And he sent me an X post about the WEF, World Economics Forum, you know, admits that they're geoengineering. Or that they want that. And he says, the debate is over, my friend. And I said, what do you mean the debate is over? And I say, it's a long way from admitting to geoengineering exists to everything is geoengineering, which is what I get as a talk show host all the time. Every time there is a contrail in the sky, we're being sprayed. It's a line in the sky. They're spraying us. It's nonsense. Stop it. All right. And, but anyway, Jeremy writes me back and says, not one line. That's not what we're talking about. Why is it nonsense? You don't think the United Nations or government would do that? Come on, man. You know better than that, Bill. If they do all that other crap to us. I said, okay, maybe that's true. All right, maybe they're doing it all the time. No, I don't think so, though. Because geoengineering chemicals would destroy airline engines if it was put in jet fuel. And that's one of the biggest complaints of the conspiracy theories that come at me all the time. All right. And that's why my eyes glaze over on this kind of stuff, even more than the chemtrails supposedly are glazing over the skies. This is where I'm coming down, though, whether it's JFK or RFK Jr. talking about it, whether it's Lucretia or anybody else. In my opinion, arguing with the geoengineering cult is just as bad as the significant number of flat earthers that we have in Southern Oregon or the biblical earth folks. Okay. God bless you. But I think you're just barking up the wrong tree, okay? Geoengineering is absolutely real. It does happen. It's been discussed openly for a long time, and now even more openly these days. Here is the issue that I have with it. Most of the folks who discuss it, and maybe even RFK Jr. for that matter, they use it as something which is always going on, wherever you happen to be. They're spraying the West Coast. Oh, the spraying is heavy today. I get those kind of emails and comments, all right? Every contrail is in is geoengineering, and that's pure nonsense, all right? But here's my bottom line on the geoengineering conspiracy. We have so many battles to fight. So many battles. Battles that are much clearer and easier to document and dead bang do something about it. Folks around Southern Oregon, we're not even getting control yet of our state and local governments and bending them to our will instead of this globalist, stack and pack housing and sustainable development and all the rest of it. I look at the geoengineering battles and the geoengineering conspiracies. These are the kind of battles that have absolutely no chance of affecting policy. You're not going to get anything done with this. But so many people focus on that. You're ignoring the nonsense that comes out of our city councils and the Vision 24s and the Planning 2050s and the bike laning of your downtowns and the making of the highways for the bums and the climate-friendly, equitable communities. You're not getting involved in that fight and doing something which is out there. You can see, touch, and look at it day after day after day, how it's affecting your lives. The EV push, all this other stuff. But so many people will focus on geoengineering, which is, yeah, probably going on, but are you going to affect that? Probably not. So I'll tell you what. Stop the gangrene mandates. Stop the sustainable development pushes first. Do those. Take care of that. That's the direct threat on your life right now. Then you can get back to me on the geoengineering. That's my overall take on this. The geoengineering conspiracy is one of the biggest, huge, wheel-spinning sucks of time and energy at this point in the United States of America. God bless you. You want to keep reading about it? You want to keep calling Coast to Coast AM or Ground Zero? Wonderful. That is fine. But if you can't handle all the other gangrene and property rights and Senate Bill 762 things being done by our own state legislators and all the rest of it, if you can't get control of that and get some common sense policy here, how the hell do you ever think you're going to take care of geoengineering? All right. I'm sorry to start off with a little bit of a rant, but priorities, priorities, priorities. You can't fight it all at the same time. Pick a battle or two. The geoengineering battle is probably not going to be won at your Medford City Council or Talent City Council or anybody else at this point in time. I wish you could. But it'd be great if you could stop the gangrening and the sustainable development push, which is going to do more to destroy your life than probably anything that's happening in the geoengineering jets, wherever they happen to be, wherever they might be, according to RFK Jr. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED 99.3 KBXG.
The following preview has been rated immature for all audiences except metal roof enthusiasts and small children. In the not-too-distant sunbaked future, in a world where leafy debris and pine needles collect on unsuspecting homeowners' roofs, where just one seemingly harmless airborne ember could cause a catastrophic fire, two unassuming technicians...
He's talking about us!
...embark on an epic journey to fabricate and install fire-resistant metal roofs on Southern Oregon buildings. Heroes will rise. Fire hazards will fall.
This is awesome!
This summer, call the Metal Roofing Division at Fontana Roofing and witness the sheer...
So what do you think?
So it's like we're superhero firefighters except without the supernatural powers, form-fitting costumes, and inherent danger?
Exactly.
Can we drive big, shiny red trucks?
Maybe in the sequel.
For an epic, fire-resistant roof, call Fontana Roofing's Metal Roof Division. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
The model year-end closeout on new Iron Bull trailers continues at Two Dogs Fabricating. Iron Bull has instant rebates on remaining 2024 Iron Bull trailers while they last. There's an instant $750 rebate on 12 to 16-foot dump trailers and a $500 rebate on equipment trailers from 16 to 24 feet. The 2024 model year-end closeout on North Star-made Iron Bull trailers is for a limited time. So go pick out yours at Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford. Visit twodogsfab.com.
Bi-Coastal Media's 2024 Best of Southern Oregon Magazine, presented by Dusty's Transmissions, is here. Visit bestofsouthernoregon.com to view the new magazine online and pick up a copy at Food for Less, Sherm's Thunderbird Market, Dairy Queen on Biddle Road, and Albertsons on West Main. Congratulations to all the winners representing Southern Oregon's best suppliers of goods and services. If you'd like to be a pickup location for the 2024 Best of Southern Oregon Magazine, please email rvcontact@bicoastal.media.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
So, Kamala and Tim Walz, they're going to be interviewed. So finally, there's going to be an interview, a sit-down interview. Dana Bash, tomorrow night, apparently. Now, it's not going to be live, so it's going to be recorded and edited. And they have to be together. Why is this? To make sure that no uncomfortable questions get asked? Well, it's kind of a weird one. Kamala's the one that's been inaccessible. Everyone's been able to talk with Tim. But, I know. Yet another Conspiracy Theory Thursday on Wednesday. Oh, okay. Well, at least it'll be, 37 or 38? Well, no, there's been no press conference. It's still, 37, 38 days. Nothing changes. It'll be interesting to see if the interview is yet another cover-up or if there will actually be some journalism done. Hard to say. Get back to you. I will have to watch that tomorrow night. It's 6:27. Tom's in Talent. Hello, Tom. Is your power on, first off? Anybody who calls from Talent, I have to ask that because it's been off a lot, off and on.
So far, this phone would not work without electricity. So we're doing fine here.
Okay, civilization is there. It is not 1870 in Talent. Good. So what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I'm really wondering why Oregon is lagging so far behind California in subsidizing illegals. You know, Oregon only offers $30,000 for an illegal alien wanting to, have a first payment on their home.
Right.
But California, they just passed a law. It's going to be $150,000. So I'm just wondering why Oregon is way behind California. I mean, I really think, you know, that makes a good case for just, get rid of the states altogether and just homogenize the whole thing in the one happy internment camp.
Well, yeah, just third world the entire West Coast to start, apparently. And
that would be a good start.
Well, you know, I don't know if you recall this. A number of years ago, people used to laugh at Rush Limbaugh, the late Rush Limbaugh, and I think it's good to remind people of this, that Rush used to say that ultimately the left wanted it to be where we would not have elections anymore, where so-called the people that are trying to save democracy wanted to make sure that there was no need or not necessary or not allowed to have elections anymore. And don't tell me that might not be part of the process when you're doing this, when you're importing the third world.
I mean, it's a good cause. I mean, if you got rid of elections, then you really could save democracy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, so.
By the way, I just wanted to remind you, if people were wondering what we were talking about, that $30,000 contribution to purchase a home, for the down payment deal. That's the Hacienda program, the nonprofit. And the state legislature, by the way, did that. I think that was in 2022 is when they passed that. And it's amazing. Now, the claim, though, is that unlike what talk radio has been reporting the last few days, that it didn't prohibit American citizens from getting or for applying for these down payments. But wouldn't the real question be, why would you be offering down payment assistance to people who don't belong here or are here as foreign nationals on work visas. Why would you be doing that?
You know, it's quite logical. You know, we all learn in school that some animals are more equal than others.
And, yeah.
So we got to keep that in mind always. Of course, that's government's role, is to, you know, free housing, free health care, free education, free food, free credit card, free cell phones. I mean, it just goes on. So we got to support this.
Well, think of how wonderful your lifestyle will be. You're not going to have to do anything in the future.
Yeah, just got to.
You'll sit there in talent, and your monthly allotment of carbon credits will be delivered, right? Your Soylent Green socialized food will probably be delivered to you also, right?
Could you tell me a little bit more about this Soylent Green? It sounds wonderful. I mean, green energy, green food, so.
It's people, right? It might be interesting to find that movie and show it to a younger generation, the ones that are in love with the socialist agenda, because ultimately I have a feeling that's where it ends up going. We end up eating our own, literally. Yikes.
Yeah, there we go.
Good hearing from you, Top. Thanks for that. 770-5633. Let me go to the next line. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
Hey, Bill. It's Matt.
Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Hey, so there's a lot of takes on this statement from Zuckerberg. I went through and read a bunch of different news stories from Yahoo.
This was Zuckerberg more or less falling on his sword. Gosh, I'm really sorry. I'm really, really sorry. I censored you and bent the knee for the government. Of course, I was really happy to do it at the time, you know, but that kind of thing, right? That's where you're coming from.
Yes. So I have a new word for him. He's what we call a free speech beater. Okay?
It's like
a woman beater. You know how women beaters, they beat the hell out of their wives, and then they apologize the next day and bring them flowers, and then they beat the hell out of them the next day.
Or like a bad cop that is beating someone and saying, "Stop resisting," as they're beating someone, right?
Yeah, so that's what he is. He beats the hell out of free speech, then he apologizes in some lame-ass letter, and then he comes back and beats the hell out of free speech again. But there's something that I haven't heard anybody reference this, so of course I had to call you and bring it up. In the third paragraph, the sentence says, ultimately, it was our decision whether or not to take content down, and we own our own decisions, including COVID-19-related changes we made to our enforcement in the wake of the pressure. So forget everything else that everybody's talking about. He is saying right there, because people were saying, oh, he's doing it because he's afraid Trump's going to get in the office. Some people were saying that he's just hedging his bets. No, the fact is, he's taking the pressure off the federal government to prevent them from taking away anything else. I'm almost thinking that somebody called and said, you need to put out a statement, and your statement needs to be, it was your fault that you didn't have to cave, that though we made suggestions, you didn't have to do it. And you did it anyway, and you need to admit that this was that you were the ones who did this. Why isn't he blaming the government here, really?
I can tell you why he isn't blaming the government. He's probably looking at the arrest of the Telegram social media channel founder and the CEO in France the other day.
So my wife was asking me, she says, well, they can't just arrest an American who's making comments on X or on Facebook or some other social media in France. Like, France can't say, oh, we're arresting you, and then drag somebody across the ocean. I told her, I said, actually, I don't know. I said, because I don't know if we have a, an agreement?
Extradition agreement.
I don't know. Do we?
Over free speech issues? I don't know. I really can't answer that. You're making me want to talk to a legal about that. Maybe I'll have to talk to the Landmark legal people, or... I'm not going to bother with the ACLU because the ACLU only likes free speech for certain people, but at least these days.
Yeah,
it used to be that way. That's really interesting. Well, I looked at what Zuckerberg said somewhat the way you did, is that this is covering their body. Yeah, we did it. But I think when it comes right down to it is that the deep state, which, of course, social media is a part of also, is looking to circle the wagons and bite back if you're not going to get in line. So I think getting in line means that you fall on your own sword and we go, oh, okay, well, you're a private business. And then the non-thinking Republicans will run it through that that filter, that lens of the, well, it's a private business. They could do whatever they want. Yeah, at the behalf of the government? I don't think that makes sense. That doesn't pass constitutional muster in the common sense constitution.
I sort of half wondered if maybe Elon Musk, at first, because I was thinking along the same lines as everybody else. I thought, okay, the Telegram guy gets arrested, and Elon Musk is saying, look, man, you need to stand up now. I stood up. I took the heat. You know, you need to stand up, and you need to join forces with us, because if you don't, none of us are going to exist. We're all just going to end up being another, you know, branch of the federal government. So I thought that at first, and then when that sentence hit me wrong, and I just thought, you know, he's saying, yeah, we cave, but ultimately it's my fault.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, they caved, and I don't know if I want to, you know, to look too badly at the Zuck for it, because it comes right down to it. You know darn well that most people will cave, no matter what they do. Most people, when you have the government agents come in your room and more or less say, it's a really nice social media company that you have here, it'd be a shame to have it nationalized, wouldn't it?
Boy, that sent chills down my spine the way you said that.
Uh-huh. I know. That's why I said it.
It sure is nice, that house you got. Too bad about that fire map.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the NSA, you think Facebook is good at surveillance. You know, NSA, we've been looking at you for a long, long time. And you have some really interesting habits that you probably wouldn't want your friends to know about. Right, Mark?
I've always heard that anything that comes out of the CIA to the press was something that the NSA told the CIA to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
More on that note, I got to talk we're going to talk with Eric Peters here in just a moment. But, man, I always appreciate the call.
Segment.
All right.
You bet.
Out on the open road before they take the cars away, if we let them. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rentier Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRentier.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rentier Garage, we are united through service.
Looking for reliable roofing experts? Turn to the family-owned gem of our community, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., your go-to for metal roofing solutions, offering 25-year workmanship guarantee on all projects. New construction, re-roofing project, residential or commercial, they've got you covered. This experienced team ensures a stress-free experience from start to finish. Choose quality. Choose Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. for your metal roofing needs. Call today. Get an estimate tomorrow, 541-941-3736.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. County commissioners from around Oregon once again lambasting efforts ranking the wildfire hazards of every tax lot, pointing to examples of asphalt airport runways, parcels in a 64-home subdivision, and a gravel lot getting labeled as high hazard. At the meeting, Josephine County Commissioner John West says the map isn't going to make people safer, while Josephine County Commissioner Herman Bartschager said that people crafting the map have to check conditions on the ground, not sit at a computer doing modeling. The draft map is set to be finalized in early October. $120 million from the bipartisan infrastructure law is coming to Oregon for electric vehicle charging. $102 million will go to the West Coast truck charging and fueling corridor project. Hot weather is on the way starting tomorrow with temperatures in a low 100 degree range Thursday through Saturday, cooling to the low 90s on Sunday and mid 80s on Labor Day. Bill London, KMED.
Joel here from Butler Ford and Truck Center, and hey, I know I get excited in these ads and I start talking loud and fast, but hey, that's because I genuinely love Ford trucks and SUV. I own Fords. My family and friends drive Fords. I've been selling Fords at Butler for over 21 years to happy customers like you who've made Butler Ford the highest Google-rated Ford store in Oregon. So when I see a good deal on a Ford F-150 Super Duty or SUV, I get excited to tell you about it. And right now, I'm excited that you can pay only $399 a month to lease a Ford F-150 4x4. Pay $399 a month, drive it for 3 years, then come come back and get a new one. I also want you to know that interest rates on the new Ford Escape are down to 2.9% for 75 months. 2.9% for 75 months? So yes, I get excited about saving our customers money on a new Ford. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, off of exit 19, where we got your truck, your SUV, certified pre-owned, and your savings.
36-month lease to qualifying trading customers with $63.58 to assign and excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer doc fee on stock number 59693 and selling price of $52,905 after all rebates and discounts. 75 monthly payments of $14.59 per thousand finance. All financing on approved credit through Ford Credit. See dealer for more details.
Dreaming of moving to your dream property in the county? Most rural properties rely on a well. Plowser Drilling is here to make sure your dream doesn't turn into a nightmare. Before you buy, you'll want to make sure the well is producing plenty of water. If a new well is needed, making sure the property has good water is vital. Plowser Drilling can help. They have drilled thousands of wells in Southern Oregon and can help you make an informed decision. Plowser Drilling can perform research, schedule an on-site visit, and provide free estimates based on your area. Visit ClouserDrilling.com.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is the Rogue Valley's spray-on bedliner leader for 20 years running. We're excited to upgrade our spray-on bedliner product to MilSpec and join the fast-growing nationwide network of dealers. Our new MilSpec bedliners are backed by a nationwide lifetime warranty and feature the latest innovations in spray-on bedliner technology. Stop by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority and let our seasoned team of professionals give your truck the protection it needs with a MilSpec spray-on bedliner.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Wheels up Wednesday. Going off the road or on the road, just getting on the road someplace. Eric Peters is automotive journalist and genius, and the chief cook, bottle washer, and reviewer at epautos.com. Welcome back, Eric. How you doing?
I'm good, Bill, and that was just the perfect bumper, I think, for our conversation today.
Absolutely. In fact, I wanted to talk about your premier article this morning, A Look at a Compliance Engine, because most of what is coming out of the out of Detroit and the rest of the vehicle manufacturers around the world, it's not what people are actually asking for. It's not what people would wish to buy. It's what you are allowed to buy once it's been run through compliance. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us about that? How's that working today in the automotive world?
Yeah, and as we've talked about a little before, engines continue to get smaller and smaller, and people are wondering, well, why is that? It has to do with compliance. This week, I'm test driving the Lexus GX 550, which is essentially a Lexus-sized version of the Toyota Land Cruiser that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's a little larger, and it has a third row, and it also has a V6 engine, if you can imagine that.
A V6? Six whole cylinders? Really? Six of them?
Oh my gosh,
you see, that's the ultra-luxurious vehicle for today, is it not?
Well, that's exactly why you're paying $7,000 more, chiefly to get the Lexus rather than the Toyota, because the Toyota comes with a four-cylinder turbo hybridized engine, which, of course, is a compliance engine. You think about the absurdity of it. The Land Cruiser weighs more than 5,000 pounds empty. Mm-hmm. And if you went back 10 years ago and told people, I'm going to put a four-cylinder engine in a 5,000-pound vehicle, they would have
they'd laugh at you.
Play Ozzy's Crazy Train song.
Yeah, exactly. They'd laugh at you just because of power-to-weight ratio, that kind of thing. Now, I know, though, that they have gotten to the point where they could throw enough turbochargers and various high-tech gear on the lowly little four-cylinder to get pretty much close to the V6 or V8 power, but at what cost? We continue
to
talk about
it. It's the paradox. You know, on the one hand, in order to comply, they have downsized engines because an engine is essentially an air pump. So if it's moving less air, it is consuming less gas. And of course, it's emitting less gas at the tailpipe. But the problem with the four-cylinder engine relative to a V6 is that it doesn't produce as much power because it's smaller. It doesn't move as much air.
Right.
So they put a turbo on it or they add a hybrid to it in order to bump up the power so that the buyer is content with paying more for less. And that's essentially what we're dealing with when we're talking about these compliance engines.
In fact, this one you're talking about, this, 5,467 pounds. That's a heavy vehicle.
And that's empty. So, you know, you put two or three people in it, and you're looking at almost 3 tons of vehicle. And so by itself, a 3.4-liter V6, which is what this thing has, would never be adequate to pull it. So, of course, they put two turbos on it to put out the output that's necessary to get it to move. And that's great, but it kind of begs the question, why not just put a V8 in it? Well, the reason they don't put a V8 in it anymore, as they would have in the past with a vehicle of this type, is, again, because of compliance. The V8 is a physically larger engine. It has bigger cylinders. It moves more air.
And as a result of that, it uses more gas and it emits more gas.
Is there a possibility in some ways, I'm going to argue the other side of this, though, that maybe one of the challenges we're facing is that we've been convinced that a 5,467-pound vehicle should go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this obsession with quickness has reached a kind of apotheosis of craziness, in that now family crossovers, you know, nothing special family crossovers, for example, like this CX-70 that I'm going to be driving next week, are quicker 0 to 60 than the majority of the factory stock V8 muscle cars that you and I loved when we were in high school.
And that's what I was kind of getting. And they sold the electric vehicles on the quickness, the super quickness.
Yeah.
And then I would say, you know, we got surveillance cameras practically everywhere you go out there. You got red light cameras at half the intersections here in Southern Oregon. What are you using the quickness for? Where? How?
Well exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And as we're slouching toward an inevitable point at which the vehicle will not be able, will prevent you from making use of the power and performance that it has. And at that point, of course, then they'll cut back on the power and performance. But I think the point that I really wanted to make here, which I think is an important one, is that implicit in this compliance stuff of the engines getting ever smaller and they're putting turbos on them, inevitably they're going to go away, because a point will come when a 2.0-liter four-cylinder, or for that matter, a 1.2-liter three-cylinder, still will not be able to comply with the regs. And at that point, everybody will be pushed into a battery-powered vehicle, which is, of course, the end goal here.
Yeah, the end goal is to push us into battery-powered vehicles, because ultimately the goal is to not have you in your own vehicle.
Yes.
Ultimately. Or else the only people who will be in the vehicles would be the elites, those who could afford the luxury.
I'm glad you raised that point, because there's an element of meanness involved here, too. It's not that V8s, or for that matter, six-cylinder engines are going to go away. They're just going to become extremely expensive, so that only very rich people can afford to have nice things anymore. And that's part of what they want. I think they don't like the idea that people like you and I could potentially afford to go out and drive a V8 or a six-cylinder powered car. It's not enough that they have it. It's that we can't have it. That's part of this whole agenda.
And I agree with you on the meanness aspect of it, because the green agenda has always been kind of fostered under the idea that, you know, it's really great to be a rich person, especially rich people who donate to the Democratic Party, let's say, for example, or to, you know, the globalist political interests there. But what fun is it being rich and elite if poor people or just regular middle class schmoes can afford 95% of what you have, right? What's the fun?
Yeah,
in that?
Exactly. You know, it gets to the fatuity of the the egalitarianism that they pretend to be in favor of. Nothing of the kind. We had in America a very real egalitarianism, in that a working class guy, you know, an electrician or a plumber, could afford a nice little single family house, could afford two cars, could afford a wife and kids, you know, and that's what they're trying to get rid of. So we get to the point where only the very affluent can afford a single family home. Only the affluent can afford a vehicle, and the rest of us are herded into little tiny apartments in some urban freedom city somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Now, is this why, though, you hear so much talk from the automobile manufacturers and this focus on delivering transportation as a service?
Of course. It's a subscription model. It's just like streaming stuff on TV. You know, instead of going out and buying a DVD and you own the thing, and you could potentially own it for the next 20 or 30 years, pass it on to your kids, you rent access to the movie, which can be withdrawn at any time.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of the chuckles I've had with my son, Will. My son, Will, is, 25, going to be 26 here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And he says, Dad, why do you still have that old school iPod? I have an old school iPod Classic. I have three of them at home.
Mm-hmm.
I got about 30,000 songs in them, right? Everything that I've ever wanted to listen to, you know, I've got it in there. And he says, I do Spotify on my phone if I'm looking for different songs and things like that. And I said, yeah, the difference is, Will, is that I have it in my possession. What do you have? Mm-hmm. Right? You know?
Yeah, well, it's very true. And the youth, generally speaking, doesn't understand that, you know, they have access to these things, but they don't truly own them. They're allowed possession of them, and it's conditional. You know, ultimately, when somebody else can withdraw or take away something, you don't control it, you don't own it. And if we've learned anything over the course of the past several years, being under the control of these people is probably not a good idea.
And do you think that that's maybe what they've been conditioning the younger generation to not worry so much about that that ownership, even coming down to the WEF, the mantra from a few years ago, you will own nothing, but you'll be really happy, that kind of thing?
Of course, it's just like in all those old Soviet propaganda posters where, you know, the proletariat is always smiling and looking very ruddy-cheeked and healthy, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, this is and note, too, that you know, Harris and Waltz are trying to portray themselves as joyful, because coercive collectivism is always joyful, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And a look at a compliance engine. That's a great article on epautos.com. And you just have such great stuff there. Now, another aspect of modern-day vehicles that you have been railing against for years have been another form of compliance, and this is the vehicle, the trend of vehicles nagging you, whether it's lane assist, mm-hmm. braking assist. What's the other one? Oh, the other one is ASS. You really hate ASS, mm-hmm. the automated start-stop system. Mm-hmm. And you said that now in the newer vehicles, they used to have a button on the dash that you would just hit the button and turn off ASS. Okay, so the ASS goes away. And then it just runs normally. But you say that they're getting rid of that now, or making it harder to turn off?
Yeah, first, you know, they've habituated people to these features that almost nobody, nobody that I know of, wanted. They just began to appear in cars, right? You know, mm-hmm. about 10 years ago, I think, the first ASS systems began to be standard all of a sudden, oddly, you know, as if people wanted to have an engine that shuts off every time they they stop at a red light.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a button, and usually it was conveniently located on the center console or the dash somewhere, and you could push the button and defeat the system. Well, now, of course, almost heck, every new car has a touch screen, doesn't it? And they bury the so-called off button, which is no longer a physical off button, deep within the menu, so it's becoming a real chore to find it and shut it off, with the idea that, you know, they're going to habituate people to, it's just not worth the effort, I'll just leave it on.
Which was really
the
intent.
That's how they do this.
This was really the intent of it in the first place. And
yes.
Much like backup cameras, too. Nobody was asking for backup cameras, but because of compliance, and this is where the car manufacturers did not fight back enough, you got to the point where the windows are tiny, right? Windows are tiny. Mm-hmm. Visibility out of a lot of modern cars is next to impossible. So then you had to have the backup camera, right?
Yeah, now those are federally required, whereas the ASS system is not. And the latest system that is just sort of an elaboration of this underlying trend is what I wrote about the other day, which is this drowsy driver, distracted driver warning system that they are now putting in vehicles, mm-hmm. which consists of a camera that's pointed at the driver and watches your eye movement. And if the system decides that you're not looking ahead, it will start to badger you to do that. And then if you put a piece of tape over it, it will literally say, sit up, like you're back in sixth grade. Sit up, Johnny, sit up.
And it's nagging you? The car's doing this now?
Yes, it's doing it now. And the thing that really troubles me is that I'm just certain, I'd put money down on it, that what they'll do, the next step, after having gotten people used to the idea of having this distracted, drowsy driver thing in their car, they'll make it part of the mandatory safety system, and if you try to defeat it, as I did, I posted a video of it, you can just put a piece of paper or tape over the eye, and that frustrates it. It can't see you. Well, then they'll program the car so that the car will probably pull off to the side of the road, or it will go into limp mode where it barely moves unless you put the piece of tape off and let the system monitor you as you drive.
How do we ever live with this stuff before, Eric? I don't know. How do the country survive?
You know, people get seduced by convenience. They think these little intrusions are no big deal. Oh, it's just a minor annoyance, like with the ASS button. No, it's just push the button. No big deal. They don't understand what the long-term goal is here, and it's the old thing about the frog in the pot of water. Oh, it's nice and warm now. It's getting a little warmer. It's getting a little warmer. They don't understand that underlying all of this, in my opinion, is a maliciousness. They are trying to make driving insufferable. They're trying to take all control of the vehicle away from the driver, so the driver just wants to give up and not drive the car anymore.
What if Team Freedom were to take its creativity and its efforts, so to speak, into defeating this somehow? I mean, and I'm dead serious mm-hmm. about this, because I've often wondered if the next war is not even going to be fought with bombs and drones, but it's going to be fought with just software hacks, in which perhaps creative people out there end up being enlisted to hack the software on most modern cars and just stop the annoyances and just, you know, especially maybe after it's out of warranty, you don't care at that point.
Well, it's already being done, and we've already seen what the response is. You probably have heard about it. I think you and I have talked about it. People who have defeated For example, some of the programming in diesel-powered trucks and diesel-powered vehicles generally are put a tune on it.
Mm-hmm.
This has become an excuse for a hutting, literally. I mean, they literally will send the body armor-clad, tactic-cooled thugs out to any shop that does that. And if you as an individual do it and they find out about it, they'll seize your vehicle and have it destroyed unless you bring it back to OEM condition. And I foresee what they're going to do is to criminalize any tampering. That's how they'll put it. Any tampering with whatever the thing came with from the factory.
A lot of the news right now in the automotive world seems to be designed to sell used cars. Is it just me?
No, it's absolutely true. And that is going to bring us to the next crucible point. Because as long as there is an alternative to all this creepy, overtech, big brothery stuff, a lot of people, and I think more and more people, are going to continue to just opt out and keep what they've got or buy an older vehicle that doesn't have this stuff. So what's the solution to that? Inevitably, I think there will be a push, certainly if Harris and Waltz become the next elected Führer of the country, to, again, make it illegal for people to own or operate such vehicles on the public roads. That's what they're going to do. I'm certain of it.
Mm. The thing I would then say, then, is that do you think Team Freedom wakes up at that point and rediscovers the uses of ropes and pitchforks and torches and things like that? Because it's not exactly as if the apparatchiks in Washington, D.C. are huge numbers of people. And yet,
right.
And yet they have way more influence and power, apparently. But it's power because we let them take it.
Right? Correct. Exactly. Because for the most part, people put up with it. They submit to it. And you're 100% right. If people pushed back, you know, like you and I have talked about over the course of the pandemic, if even a third of the people had absolutely refused to put on the mask in the first couple of months of the pandemic, that whole thing would have ended really quickly. But most people just went along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we had to deal with that for 2 years, and it's still out there. So you're right. It's all about enough people saying no and exercising the power of no.
Yeah. Back on that story we were just talking about, though, defeating the nanny state within the dashboard. Mm-hmm. It's called A Piece of Tape Works for now, in which you put tape over it. Has anyone considered trying to make perhaps a screen which has your picture on it just looking around and being normal? And then it moves around a little bit. In other words, we had to get so creative that we put a fake face in front of our face just so that it's not yelling at us to, you know, you're looking at the wrong thing. You know,
yeah, there are certainly ways to do that. But I think one of the impediments to that is that these vehicles are connected. You know, they're part of the Internet of Things. They are receiving and sending data all the time, mm-hmm. even when you're not driving them. A lot of people don't understand that. And the fact that they're connected means they can be disconnected. So if anything is hinky, as far as they're concerned, meaning, you know, the government or the car makers, which are now in bed with the government, they simply send out an update that tells the vehicle to brick itself or that it will only operate kind of, sort of, you know, enough for you to be able to take it to the dealer to be repaired.
Can you disconnect the Internet from the car in order to keep it from being connected and bypass some of this? Do we know yet at this point?
You know, probably, but then the question becomes whether there's some built-in mechanism that will prevent it from working, because literally these things are now, they're now dependent on getting these updates all the time for the software and the operating systems. They're like smartphones, you know, and after a while I foresee that these cars will be just like an older smartphone that can no longer be updated, and at that point it's effectively useless, right? You have to throw it away and get a new one.
Well, it's not even useless. It's on your safe because it hasn't been updated. You forgot about that part. You know, they talk, oh, you can't use that phone anymore. It hasn't been updated. Oh, it's just a security risk everywhere you go.
Yeah, I think the only way this is going to end is if we decide to end it and push back. And if some car company would come out and join that fight and push back against it, then we might get somewhere.
We were hoping for Toyota, and then they got rid of the Toyota, or the, was it the Toyota, the guy who ran Toyota that was just...
Yeah, Akio Toyota, the grandson of the founder, they pushed him out in favor of a new guy who's much more pro-EV, but still, Toyota is trying, Mazda is trying. The problem is that they're not going gung-ho and directly addressing the underlying issue here, which is the lie that, oh, the climate is changing because people are driving cars.
Yeah,
that's
and because of an inert gas, carbon dioxide, which, by the way, makes plant life grow and is necessary for that. Yeah, we're not supposed to mention that part. Well, this brings me up to another article, and this is something that Bob Shan from Medford sent me, and this had to do with Stellantis. And you've talked about how they're really trying to kill Stellantis, Chrysler.
Yep.
Italian government puts Stellantis on notice. Build the battery plant or lose funding. Now,
sure.
Chrysler or Stellantis has been dragging its feet there because people don't want the EVs. People are not looking to spend that kind of money. But they're saying, hey, do it or else is what the government's doing. But I guess this is what happens when you're in bed with the government, and many of these car companies are, as you well mentioned.
Yeah, sure. You know, they allow themselves to be seduced by their greed, thinking they could cash in by being compliant. Yeah, you know, we'll do what you say and give us lots of green dollars in exchange. And apparently they've forgotten the old dictum about he who pays the piper calls the tune.
Mm-hmm.
So once they become dependent on all of this green cash that they're getting from the government, well, what did they think was going to happen? It's exactly what is happening. And, you know, Stellantis is in a really, really dark place right now. Their operating profit is down by nearly 50%. It's absolutely catastrophic. And if they don't figure out a way to pull back on the stick, they're going to hit the ground, and that's going to be the end of it.
And the fewer manufacturers that we have, the fewer people with an ability to maybe push back against this, because they would have to be able to do it at that corporate level, I think. KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass is where you are. This is the Bill Myers Show. Let me grab a call here for Eric. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Tracy in Puget Sound.
Tracy, now that you're in Puget Sound, what's your question for Eric today at EP Autos?
Well, great topic this morning. So in Europe, I understand, and we're talking about the expiration of vehicles and getting older vehicles off the road. We've had the Obama Cash for Clunkers initiative in the U.S. of a few years ago. What about in the EU community? Is there actually like a limit, like you can't have a 15-year-old car on the road or something like that? Are we all going to be driving some sort of a version of the an electronic or electric EV, like a Fiat, you know, kind of like the people's car, the Trabant of the e-world? What's going on
there?
Yeah,
well, they're working on that. I'm glad you brought up that point, because it's an example of the really greasy, oily, snaky way they do things. They don't pass overt laws forbidding you to own, say, a 15-year-old car. What they do is make it impossible to get repair parts for it. That's what they've done in Europe. They have increased. They have passed laws that forbid repairing these older vehicles. And at that point, then they're declared obsolete. And, of course, at that point, they're useless. And so you have to throw it away and get, as you say, your battery-powered people's car.
Batteries-powered people. You know, I'm glad you brought up the Trabant. The Trabant, that was quite a memory. People don't remember that one. But, yeah, what a horrible piece of junk. But that's the socialized car world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at least it was cheap. I mean, that's how bad things are getting. You know, at least in the old Soviet Union, the average Soviet prole could aspire to own a Trabant, because it was a very basic, very primitive, very crudely made vehicle. You know, it didn't operate very well, didn't go very far, but at least you could aspire to owning it. You know, we're getting to a point now where it will cost the average person $40,000, $50,000 to get their battery-powered people's car, and people just can't afford that. Heck, they can barely afford to buy groceries anymore.
Yeah. The next year or two or three is really going to be that that tipping point, one form or another, right, on where we're going to go with personal transportation. Would that be a fair assessment? This is,
I think so, absolutely. Yeah. And much will hinge on the outcome of this election. You know, I find myself sort of elliptically cheering for the orange man, because I do think per Leia Organa in Star Wars, he is our only hope, as awful as that is.
Okay, let me go to another phone here. If you wanted to talk with Eric, I got about another minute or two left with him. 770-563-3770-KMED. Hi, good morning. You're with Eric Peters at EP Autos. Who's this?
This is Terry.
Hey, Terry. Yeah, go ahead. What's on your mind?
I want to know how I would like to buy an older used Camry, one that doesn't have a lot of the stuff on it. How old do I, or how far back do I have to go in order to, get one that doesn't have too much of the automated stuff on it?
Well, you're lucky, because they only just recently ruined the Camry. If you go back to 2023, you can still get it with the V6. And if you don't want the V6, you can get it with the standard four-cylinder engine, which is not turbocharged, not hybridized. The car does not have a CVT automatic. It may have a touchscreen, but the big brothery stuff is at a minimum, and it's still one of the most brilliant cars you can get in terms of long-term reliability, repairability, durability, resale value.
You know, Terry, I'll give you an example, though, of how rock-solid reliable Camrys have been. Linda once had a 2000, I think it was a, No, she had a 1999 Camry, and she bought it new and drove it for a number of years, replaced it with a Volkswagen a number of years ago. And I still saw that Camry on the road because I recognized the license plate. And the thing is 25, 26 years old, and it's still, I mean, yeah, it's looking a little worn at this point. It's still on the road reliably from the looks of it. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. Really is.
Yeah, I've had some older Toyota cars and pickup and Tacoma. I still have a Tacoma that, it's amazing. A little trouble I've had with it. I had a Corolla, an early 2000 Corolla that I put, I don't know, like 300,000 miles on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Had a little.
Yeah, I would recommend holding on to that, the Tacoma that you have, because they've ruined that one, too.
All right.
Hey. Oh, damn, this probably be the last pickup I ever own.
Yeah.
Because I'm 80 years old, so.
Yeah, in that case, hang on to it, Terry. Thanks for the call. All right, let me go to the next line here for Eric Peters. Hi, you're on with EP Autos. Good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Michael Shaw.
Michael.
I'll stay on the same tune that the last caller was on. Eric, if you were to go out and buy a brand new full-size pickup truck today, and it was going to be the last, which one would you recommend?
Be the last pickup.
Yeah,
okay.
That's actually an easy question to answer. I would rush out to my nearest Ram dealer and see whether they still have any Ram Classics in inventory. Get it with the Hemi, without the e-torque system, and you should be good to go.
Okay.
Got it. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Michael. We'll take one more, and then we'll cut Eric loose, and just good stuff as always. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Logan, one of your best sponsors, Bill.
Hello, Logan. What's up?
No, not American Renter Garage. Dwayne Barkley wanted to just give a shout-out to that old man. He has a beautiful Camry that he normally doesn't sell vehicles, a beautiful Toyota Camry sitting out there in front of American Renter Garage he's selling.
Oh, really? How much? He's curious.
I think he's asking $2,500 on it. There's some more miles on it. He just went through it. I know you know Dwayne Barkley. He's a great American, a great sponsor, so I wanted to give him a little plug. He's got one there for sale for that old guy to go look at.
All right. Well, that's a great idea. Thanks for mentioning that. Terry, there you go. Head over to American Rentier Garage. Good job. Hey, Eric, what do you got into the... By the way, thank you very much, Logan. What you got in there for next week? What are you thinking, huh?
Well, they're dropping off the new Mazda CX-70, which is a new model that's joining the Mazda lineup. And it's basically a two rather than three-row version of the CX-90. And what's significant about that, you know, yeah, it's a crossover, but Mazda's kind of bucking the trend. It comes standard with a six-cylinder engine, not a turbocharged 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine. So Mazda's doing a lot of good stuff. And by the way, Mazdas also don't come with ass, word to the wise. So mm-hmm. If you don't want a new vehicle that has that system, go check out any new Mazda.
Automated start-stop, not there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Duly noted, all right? But, you know, if we keep going down this road like you had mentioned with the, putting the surveillance fence around the vehicles and such like that and making it go slower and turbocharged fours and maybe non-turbocharged fours eventually. You know, everybody laughs at that Vanagon of mine, that 82 Vanagon mm-hmm. diesel that goes 0 to 60 in 49 seconds. Hey, everyone will be...
catch up and pass them.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, hey, my car's not a compliance car. There we go. Take care, Eric. EPautos.com. Always good talking with you. We'll see you next
week.
Thanks,
Bill. Appreciate it.